Yep. So we have been covering a series all about emotional health, and most people know this. People have come in and out at various points. Some people have been able to join in the small groups, and some people haven't been able to join in the small groups. So everybody's in a kind of different place with all of that. But there is a progression through the book and through the studies. So the point at which I'm jumping in now is Sabbath and the Daily Office. I can't remember the full title of it. You can remember it, can't you? What is it?
Yeah, discover the rhythms of the Sabbath and Daily Office.
Yeah, discover the rhythms of the Sabbath and the Daily Office. Okay, so I'm kind of not really going to look at Daily Office because Sabbath has so much in it, really. So I will get straight in. Well, I was just thinking, Sabbath is meant to be a really good day. It's meant to be a really good day. And I don't know about you, but sometimes you just have a really bad day, don't you? And I had a really bad day last week. I went to Nelson, so that was a start, you know. I don't know if you've ever been to Nelson. No, I mean, I'm sure the people who live in Nelson think Nelson's a great place. I'm sure Nelson is a great place. But I'd never really been to Nelson before. And I was going somewhere, so I kind of got lost going there. And then when I on my way, I decided I'd stop for a coffee, then realised I hadn't got any money to pay for the coffee. So I'd ordered my coffee, my lunch, and my breakfast. It was all sitting on the counter, and I had no money. So I said, oh, really sorry, I'm just going to have to leave that. And then this lovely, mind you, this was a nice little bit in the day, this lovely young man next to me just said, oh, I'll buy it for you.
Wow.
I was like, what, all of that? And he went, yeah. I said, it's £8. He said, yeah, that's fine. So he just bought it. So that was a good thing. That was a really good thing in the day. So then I went, carried on to the place, and then I parked somewhere. I wondered why nobody else was parking there, but it didn't make any difference. I still parked there. And then at the end of the day, I had one of those lovely yellow stickers on my windscreen. and when I'd arrived at this course, the minute we arrived, I left, dropped my keys on the floor downstairs, so a woman had to come upstairs and shout, has anybody left their keys? And it was me. So, and then the fire alarm went off and we all had to evacuate the building. So we're all outside. And I thought, what is happening with this day? So then eventually we get to the end of the day and the post has arrived. Was it a birthday card? No. Was it a birthday card for you? Was it a birthday? No, it wasn't. No, it was from, who was it from? It was from Chester Council. And we'd been driving in a bus lane when we went to Chester. So we got £55 that cost altogether. Anyway, that's nothing to do with Sabbath, but I just thought it's one that sometimes we have a bad day, but switch that. It's all about having a good day. A good day, okay, which is the opposite. So can we just have the first slide? So what good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? So we've heard this verse that Jesus said. And in the verse here, he's saying that the soul has got eternal value and it's worth more than the whole world. And you might think, well, what's the soul got to do with Sabbath? Well, the soul's got everything to do with Sabbath and Sabbath's got everything to do with the soul. Without kind of getting into, like, what is the soul? And, you know, let's get all theological about it. So we'll explore that a little bit further in a minute. So when I was about a year and a bit ago, I went on a sabbatical, which was kind of some time out to kind of really reconnect with God. And it wasn't that I wasn't connecting with God at all. It wasn't that my relationship with God was really bad or, you know, hated him or I was having a big downer on him. It's just I knew that some things needed to be put into a different order in my life and I needed to focus. So I took this time out and I was led to a book called Soul Keeping by John Ortberg. And you know John Ortberg, if you know him, he tells the greatest stories and he's a really great teacher. And he is a fan of Dallas Willard, who is a Christian philosopher, was a Christian philosopher, has written so many amazing books. And that book really connected me back up with God. And this is a story from the book.
...that straddled the banks of a beautiful stream. The stream was fed by springs that were old as the earth, and deep as the sea. The water was clear like crystal. Children laughed and played beside it. Swans and ducks swam on it. You could see the rocks and the sand because the water was so fresh. High in the hills, far beyond anyone's sight, lived a man who served as the keeper of the springs. He had been hired a long time ago, and no one could remember a time when he wasn't there. He would travel from one spring to another in the hills, removing branches or fallen leaves or debris that might pollute the water. But his work was unseen. One year, the town council decided they had better things to do with their money. No one supervised the man anyway. They had roads to repair and taxes to collect and services to offer, and giving money to an unseen stream cleaner had become a luxury they could no longer afford. So the old man left his post. High in the mountains, the springs went untended. Twigs and branches and worse muddied the liquid flow. Mud and silt compacted the creek bed. Farm wastes turned parts of the stream into stagnant bogs. For a time, no one in the village noticed. But after a while, the water was not the same. It began to look brackish. The swans flew away to live elsewhere. The water no longer had a crisp scent that drew children to play by it. Some people in the town began to grow ill. All noticed the loss of sparkling beauty that used to flow between the banks of the streams that fed the town. The life of the village depended on the stream, and the life of the stream depended on the keeper. The city council reconvened, the money was found, the man was rehired. After yet another time, the springs were clean, the stream was pure, children played again on its banks, illness was replaced by health, the swans came home, and the village came back to life. The life of a village depended on the health of the stream. The stream is the soul, and you are the keeper.
There's a great importance to tending the soul, to guarding it, to nurturing it, to protecting it, so that the water can be drunk. And, you know, we talk about rivers of living water flowing out of us, but what do we want those waters to be like? You know, they need to reflect the goodness of the source. And if we don't tend to that part of ourselves, our heart, our soul, then the waters can become stagnant, can't they? And they can become bitter, and we can become grasping because we're not connecting with the purity, and kind of everything gets out of kilter, and our thought life gets out of kilter. And so it's kind of super important. And Dallas Willard, who I mentioned before, says this, that our soul is like an inner stream of water which gives strength, direction, and harmony to every other area of our life. When the stream is as it should be, we are constantly refreshed and exuberant in all we do, because our soul itself is then profusely rooted in the vastness of God and his kingdom, including nature. And all else within us is enlivened and directed by that stream. Therefore, we are in harmony with God, reality, and the rest of human nature, and nature at large. So when we don't tend our soul, we get disconnected. You know, we get disconnected from ourselves. We get fragmented in ourselves. And the thing about the soul, nurturing the soul, is that it can't be done in a hurry or a rush. It's not a hurried thing. It can't be put on a to-do list, and it can't be ticked off and then move, you know, tend to soul, tick, next thing, you know, tick, tick, tick. And I think if we're not careful, you know, we can do this with this course. You know, we can see, you know, oh, well, I've done that one, you know, I've done the one on this, I've done the one on that, ticked off, you know, silence, oh, no, about that now, tick, you know, solitude, or whatever it is. So I don't want us to do that with Sabbath. I'm not expecting everybody to suddenly be able to, including myself and ourselves, be able to sort of establish kind of Sabbath rest as a regular thing in our lives sort of straight off. One of the people who speaks well on Sabbath and one of the people who we connected up with at New Wine, his teaching was John Mark Comer. And he said it took him about 5 years to get around to kind of starting to drip and little ideas about Sabbath into his life. And then, but now they've been practicing it as a family for the last 13 years. So I'm not going to go into everything it isn't as well. There's so much I could go into. So whatever you hear today is, you can kind of go from there, use it as a springboard to go further and explore. So we've recognised now that a key practice of nurturing the soul is Sabbath. So I'm going to have the next slide. Let's go back to the beginning. So Genesis 1 and the end of Genesis 1 and into Genesis 2. So we'll just look at a little bit of that. It's hard when, you know, it's a bit of a poor show when you can't find Genesis chapter 1, isn't it? Thank you for praying for us as leaders. So God made some animals, okay, and then he says, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. And he said some other stuff, and then he gave them some stuff, and that was that. And then it says, God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So he was pleased with what he'd done. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work, and God blessed the seventh day, made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So we read a bit further on, actually, and then I'll go back and discuss it. So he says in verse 7, chapter 2, verse 7, the Lord, which is on here, the Lord God formed the man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. So God created animals and mankind on the sixth day, and it says in the chapter 2 version that he breathed his life breath into man. Now, life comes from the breath of God. And that word breathed, he breathed, is actually a word nafesh, which is really similar to the word nefesh, which means soul. So it's like he breathed the very soul into man when he breathed on him. And there's a bit more of this to do with breath, which we'll explore as we go further on. So we think about what God did there. He gathered all this disintegrated dust, all this separate bits, and he brought it all together into man. He created him. And then he completed that work by breathing life into him. I just love that. Man didn't become an integrated whole until God breathed. He brought everything together. So that's what we're craving for all the time. We're craving to get back to being integrated. We're craving to get back to that. And that's what peace is. Peace, shalom, is integration. It's that coming together. And that is elusive in this world, isn't it? Now, you can have peaceful times, you can have quiet, you can have rest, you can have a lie down, you can have a snore. You can do all of those things without God, but you can't have shalom. Because shalom is the integration of of every part of you. Mind, will, emotions, your spirit, you know, all of you, the integration of all of you, that only comes from the breath of God. We can never be whole without his breath. Amen. Can't be whole without his breath. We know that, you know, his breath is also the Spirit of God is spoken of as his breath. And on the seventh day, he rested. So he rested, he blessed it, he set it apart, as a holy time. The Sabbath was special and unique. Sabbath means stop. Sabbath means cease. That's what it means, stop. He stopped his work of creation. Why did he stop it? Because it was complete. So like an artist might complete an artwork and stand back and look at it and say, that's finished, even though most artists don't do that. They're always going back and giving it another something or other, another poke, another changing a little bit. But he didn't do that. He stepped back and he said, I've done all that now. Stop, completed. Or it's also like, I was thinking maybe like a sort of mathematical problem, or and then you come and you get a solution. And then you're satisfied because it's a solution. It's complete. You can't do anything with it anymore because it's complete. It's enough. And that's what he did. He looked at us and he looked at creation and he said, it's enough. And that word enough is really important when we come to look at Sabbath. Enough. What's enough? Because in the world, there isn't enough. There's never enough. There's never enough peace. There's never enough rest. There's never enough stuff. There's never enough time. There's never enough anything. And people can be driven, and we can be driven by the not enough. And we'll come back to that idea as well. But he was satisfied, it was enough. Can we have the other one? And he enshrined the Sabbath in the Ten Commandments as a command in Exodus 20, and also, but as a blessing as well, it was a gift. So you kind of think, sometimes we associate commands with just bossy people telling you what to do. And it's not so much that. It's all of those. The commandments were set in place to say something about the very nature of God for our good, you know, and for the good of the world, because they are good. He is good. It is good. So this sits there amongst those commandments. It is good. It's good. So as a command, there are different parts to it. So remembering the Sabbath is important. Doing no work is important. It's blessed. It's good. It's holy. It's set apart. It's unique. It's special. But then also in Exodus 16:29, it says, bear in mind. So he's saying, don't forget. So he's saying, remember again. Bear in mind, the Lord, Yahweh, has given you Sabbath. He's given it to you, my people. He's saying, celebrate this day. Remember, you are my people. Trust in me. It's good. It's blessed. It's holy. It was a reminder of Sabbath to the people. Next one. And then in Exodus again, he talks about the Sabbath a lot in Exodus. He says, and on the seventh day, he rested and was refreshed. Well, he doesn't say that in Genesis, does it? But it says that here. It says he rested in Genesis, but it doesn't say he was refreshed. But it says it here. Refreshed is a really fascinating word because it actually is rooted in that nafesh that we talked about before, the breath. And it says, the meaning of that is, he was breathed upon. That is amazing. I just think that's amazing. That after he completed his work, and then on the seventh day, it's like he went, oh, and God, the Godhead, breathed on himself. Like, oh, that's Sabbath. That's what Sabbath is. I just love that. I was like, wow, wow, we and I found that. Well, it was just there, you know. So he allowed himself to be breathed upon, and he also wants us to take the opportunity to be breathed upon and to breathe him in. So you can see how that breath idea is so important, because what is in the breath? Life. Life. So just these next few slides are in addition to this idea that Sabbath is more than a day off. So there's this little movement going on at the moment, which is called Secular Sabbath. And you can have a day off. And they're talking about finding quiet, finding silence, finding solitude. All those things are, people are twigging onto the fact that they are healthy and good for you. And so what some people might say, we mustn't do those things because those people are doing them over there and they're not in God. You say, no, hang on a minute, where did it start? You know, we have to think, no, it started in God. It started in God. And yes, you can have, everybody benefits from having a break from doing your work. Everybody benefits from that. But Sabbath is much, much more than that. It's more than a day off. It's more than a break. It's more than stopping doing your jobs. It's more than that. It's more than that for you, but it's more than that for the world, really. Which sounds grand, but it's true. So I was thinking that whole idea of, you know, catching up with things, watching box sets, eating ice cream, wearing pyjamas, you know, anybody can do that, and there's nothing wrong with doing any of that. But I was listening to John Mark Comer, and he was saying, you know, who gets to the end of watching like a box set after a box set after a box set or whatever, if you do, if you're into that, or something, it might be something else. And then they go, oh, do you know what? My soul is just in such a really great place right now. It's just so refreshed. I feel so blessed. I feel so close to God. I just feel like I could just love everybody. You know, you might go, oh, I enjoyed that. But you don't say that. You don't say the other thing. You know, and there's a difference. It's not that was wrong and you can't watch a box set. You know, it's kind of the result of things, the upshot, really. But the Sabbath says more about the nature of God and his plans. It says more about his character, more about his personality, more about who he is to you, more about who he is to the world, more about where he's been and where he's going. You kind of think, how can all that be in a day? Well, it is. We're not going to read Hebrews 4, because when you first read it, you kind of, it's one of those sort of like wiggly kind of Bible passages, and you kind of go, hang on a minute, I might need to read that again just to know what that's about. And then it goes, no, and then it goes like, therefore, and you go, hang on a minute, I need to go back. If it says therefore, I need to go back. It's one of those, you kind of, so we won't read it, but you can read it later. But in Hebrews 4, the writer is writing to Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. So they were, they'd just come into this new faith, and they're thinking, you know, what stays and what goes from our Judaism? You know, what do we keep and what do we throw away? You know, what can we do, what can't we do? They're in the middle of that as well. And so circumcision's gone. Don't do circumcision anymore, you know. But some things stay. But the Sabbath stays, actually. The Sabbath stays. And it speaks about entering into our rest, entering into biblical, spiritual rest, really. And the rest it's speaking of is when we enter into Christ, there is a resting from our working towards salvation, that he gives us that spiritual rest. Now, it is worth reading, because when the Lord started us off working, you know, so we were created, and then he said, you know, go and work in the garden and what have you. That was actually, we were working in God's rest. So our work started in God's rest. And Hebrews kind of touches on that as well. It touches on us coming from a rested place. So our life is birthed from a place of rest. So it starts in rest. Even though we work, you know, it starts in rest. And when the Sabbath comes round, it kind of reminds us of that rest. It reminds us of our salvation rest as well. So that's another big part of it. It reminds us that we're not working to connect with God. You know, he has made that happen already. And it reminded the Jewish people that they were a set apart people. And so for us as well, it reminds us that we are his. That things happen differently. there is, like I spoke about the other week, there is a different order. The world works differently for us. You know, obviously we experience all the things of the world, but we live in that world differently, from a different place. We come from a different place. So Sabbath was woven into the creation story, wasn't it? It was the seventh day. And then we have that repeated pattern of the week. So every seventh day, Sabbath, 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 Sabbath. So we're reminded of that. And then there are other feasts and patterns where there are other reminders throughout the year and then throughout the decades. And then we have things like Jubilee and all those sorts of things. They're all other versions, if you like, of Sabbath. And daily office, is the only time I'm going to mention it, is like a mini Sabbath that happens within your day, you know, maybe 10 minutes of bringing yourself before the Lord and setting things apart, setting yourself aside for a moment. And the purpose of it, because remembering is a big part with Sabbath, so remembering, he's saying, remember who I am. Remember what I've done. Remember whose you are. And remember what I've promised. So it's, we're remembering our identity. We're remembering what God has already done. And we're remembering or thinking about where he's going, what he's doing, promises yet to be fulfilled, those things. And you kind of think, how can you fit all that into a day? next one. So still on the theme of it's more than a day off, just a couple of ideas here. So the Pharisees, you will have read, were often picking Jesus up for what he was doing on the Sabbath and what he wasn't doing on the Sabbath. And some people might read that to think that Jesus was saying the Sabbath doesn't matter. You know, I could just carry on doing stuff anyway, no matter whether there's a Sabbath or not a Sabbath. Well, you could read it like that. But actually what he's doing is he's restoring the true meaning of Sabbath. He's not doing away with Sabbath and saying Sabbath's not a great idea anymore, we don't need it. He's saying Sabbath is here for reasons that you've lost sight of. So it isn't a day for placing heavy burdens on people's shoulders. Because what happened was we have Sabbath, but then the Pharisees had built a whole load of other rituals and rules and laws all around Sabbath, you know, to stop you actually breaking the Sabbath, to keep you like a big buffer zone to stop you from breaking the Sabbath. But then all these other little rituals were all getting people tied in knots, so they lost sight of what Sabbath was about in the end, they lost sight of it. So that's why he says, Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. He's not saying get rid of the Sabbath. So that's why Jesus heals and delivers on the Sabbath. And in that part there, Mark 2, the disciples have been eating grain. So, you know, you can feed the hungry, need fed on the Sabbath. So it is a day of healing. And in the light of what we've been talking about, there is a healing for the soul to be found in Sabbath. So this is a day also for our healing. So the traditional Jewish Sabbath starts at sunset on a Friday and finishes 24 hours later. And then at some point in the 4th century, going into all of it, there was a shift and involving Constantine and some of the guys, shifted the Sabbath to a Sunday and called it the Lord's Day. And then most of us we've celebrated what was Sabbath on a Sunday, but it has become something else, really. And then, you know, we get people who recognise it's important, like there was the Lord's Day Observance Society, wasn't there? So recognising something about that. But then I think a whole load of other traditions are built up around what people do on Sundays, which ended up being people going to church a lot, people hating Sunday. So, again, lost sight of what Sabbath was about. So, and then elsewhere in Scripture it says, you know, there isn't particularly a day, a specific day. to say this is Sabbath. But many people do celebrate that Friday night through Saturday. But it could be any actual day, and with yourselves, you know, and myself, you know, we have to work out what's best for us. You know, if we're if we live with other people, we have to work round other people. And everyone's at different stages of life. So that's another one. So before you kind of come to Sabbath, you have to prepare to stop, because stopping is the first thing we do. So there are four principles. There's stop, rest, delight, and worship. But in order to stop, you know, if you just suddenly stop, then you go, oh, no, I've not got the, you know, I've not got any bread in. I'm going to have to go out and get the bread, you know. Oh, no, I've not done this. I've not got that. Oh, I'll have to go out and do that, or I'll have to do this. So there has to be a preparation time. And for Jewish families, they would use the Friday as that preparation time. It's about shifting things around. So in stopping, I like this. I found a quote from a conductor. It's not on there. So he's called Ilias Fedouris, and he's the conductor and director of the orchestra of the Greek National Opera. And this is what he says. So we're thinking about stopping, pausing those spaces. And he talks about music. He says, there is no music without pause. The pause is part of the music creation. It's the sound of the silence. A small pause creates breath, punctuation, articulation, restarting, preparation for something new. And he's talking about music, but there's so many parallels there for our lives and for the creativity in our lives as well. So this time to stop. So we can drive ourselves. There's always one more thing to do, isn't there? There always is. So this stop, the Sabbath stop, is a stop from usual work. It doesn't mean you don't do anything. It isn't like stand still for the day, you know. I'm stopped. So like I said, we need to prepare for it. Get some things done the day before so we can stop. But stopping is important. And that rhythm of stopping as we build, it's building something. The next one is rest. This will look different for different people. Like I mentioned before, stages of life, you know, when you've got newborn babies, there's certain types of rest, you know, toddlers. Where do you fit your rest in? What does that look like? How do you work together with other people you might live with? So everybody's at different stages. So there's no rule, if you like, no law about how to do any of this. I just want you to try and pick up some of the principles and have a think about it and have a think about your life benefiting from this, my life benefiting from this. In Matthew 11, Jesus says, come to me, you who are heavy laden, and I will give rest to your souls. So that's all of us again. You have to remember it's like the whole integrated whole of us. It does mean our salvation, but it means much more than that as well. So on that day of rest, you might need to have some physical rest. You might need to rest from having to achieve, having to prove, earning money, gathering possessions, accumulating. Pharaoh was a slave driver, and the Israelites never produced enough when they were his slaves. But we have a different king. Like we said, he said at the end of creation, that's enough. It's enough. So when he looks at you, that's what he says. That's enough. You're enough. There's enough of you. You don't have to achieve, approve, accumulate. Rest requires trust. And like we mentioned earlier on, we can't rush, can we? You can't rush and rest at the same time. Those two things don't go together. We need to rest from hurry and worry. and do restorative things. That's got the word rest in the beginning of it, hasn't it? Things which restore you. Restore you. Slowing down. Sometimes we need to disconnect from some things, disconnect from some stressful things. Mike would say that I'm attached to my mobile phone quite a lot, and he'd be right. But there'll be times, you know, it's important. Sometimes I leave it at home, which then can be frustrating. But sometimes it's important to put things down, to disconnect from certain things in order to reconnect with things which are important. So that whole digital thing is worth giving some thought to. I love that. How do you describe delight? And I thought, well, that face kind of says it all. You know, when you're really enjoying something so much. So Sabbath is a celebration. It's a delight in the good things he's given us. You know, we delight ourselves in the Lord, it says, and he'll give us the desires of our heart. And there are so many good things that he delights in. I found this before and then I lost it again. Oh. So the Sabbath is a day to focus on what we have, not on what we have not. You know, if you have a sofa, focus on that. You know, if you, you know, it's to focus on what we have. It's not coming from a place of dissatisfaction where we have to go and get more or have more or do something more. It's about resting and delighting in what we have. So we're delighting in those good things that he's given to us. So it could be, and to make the day special, you kind of think, well, how do I make certain days special? How would you make somebody's birthday special? I'm not saying you make it like a birthday every week, but how do we make someone's birthday special? How do we make a celebration special? And I'm not saying you go like full-on steroids on this. It's more like elements of it. You know, it's not an ordinary day, but it's not, you know, full-on, you know, party. But you kind of think, well, we have special foods, you know, we do certain activities, and it's the same with Sabbath. So it might be that you kind of think, well, we'll have pudding on a Sabbath or whatever, or we'll have this kind of pudding that we don't normally have, or we'll do these things. We might play these kind of games with the kids, or that they love them, and sometimes we don't have time for it in the week, so we'll make time for it today. You know, those sorts of things. And there's probably loads of examples, but I'm sure you can think of lots more than me. Maybe going to a favourite place. You don't have to be in the house. You know, going for walks, like Dallas Willard talked about, you know, appreciating nature, connecting, breathing, slowing down. It doesn't mean it's going to, you know, we're not all going to look like an Instagram family at the end of it. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, like us on Sabbath. Look at us. Great. We're all happy. What are you doing there? Whatever. It's not about like presenting something for anybody else. You know, it's real life, you know, so things might not go perfectly well. And there are some things that I've said before, sometimes we might use them to relax or escape. But actually Sabbath's not just about escaping, it's about resting, and it's about restoring our soul. So it's up to you to identify what you think those things are. So in Philippians, you know this. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So it's kind of incorporating beauty and play, art, literature, whatever floats your boat. And then the last one is worship. So it doesn't mean you wake up in the morning and you're like, okay, kids, we're all gathering around now. We're all having like 20 hymns before breakfast and then we're going to do this. It's about an attitude of thankfulness, gratitude, appreciation, enjoyment, but, you know, knowing who the source is. So how you do that, how you connect in worship, it may well be, yeah, we are going to sing. We are going to have play some kind of worship videos, or we are going to create some worship together as a family, or I'm just going to, if you, you know, I might just listen quietly to some worship myself whilst I'm doing some other thing. You know, whatever it is that works for you, and prayer as well. But not like we all have to pray and we have to pray like this and we have to do this. It's whatever works for you. And if you've got a family that's kind of mixed with Christians and non-Christians, and you know, there's going to be things that you're going to do that they might not do. So, but the upshot is that at the end of it, as we establish rhythms and patterns that are going to restore our soul, that it makes us more loving. You know, it stops us being brackish. It makes us sweet. And when we all know what it's like when you're stressed and someone that you're with, you know, you might not know who I'm talking about, but someone that you're with is stressed, and then you also are stressed, and then you've both got things that you kind of know you need, but because people are in stressed places, you know, you can't always, you don't always connect. You know, that's like universal. I think most people would relate to that. And it's hard, isn't it, so to kind of be able to love well when you're not in a restored place. So the upshot is really to build in daily those mini offices or mini times with God, and also to look at establishing this on a more regular basis for yourselves, because from it we will allow sweet water to kind of flow through us and out of us, and we will be able to love better. So let's just finish in prayer. Yeah, Lord, I want to thank you for your wisdom, Lord, and for the wisdom of rhythm. Some of us find rhythm and routine harder to do than others. Some people just love a good rhythm, love a good routine. But Lord, the upshot is that you want to bring freedom to us, and you want to connect us with yourself, and you want us to know your shalom. So just pray, Lord, for any part of this that people can connect with and retain and use, Lord, that we will look to our practices and look to our rhythms, that we might know your restoration of our soul. Amen.